Are interest rates going to go down in 2024? Is now a good time to buy a house or an investment property?
You know, my wife, Missy, she doesn't take part in any of my real estate transactions or know what's really going on, right? Even though she's lovely, she's going to stay lovely by not being involved in the real estate game. But she's done something really, really cool recently.
Yeah.
And she took what we're currently paying in interest right now and brought it down to a number at 3.5%, where that's the number that everybody says that we should be sitting at, 3.5% to 4%. And told me that if we were to pay the same mortgage payment that we're paying right now, that we don't change when the interest rates go down, we always pay the same amount that we're paying right now. If we were to do that, we're going to shave 6 years off my mortgage.
In terms of how long you're going to be paying it.
Yes.
If you dropped it down to 3.5, what are you at, 4.5?
Right now?
Yeah.
No, I'm at 6.5.
Yes, okay.
Yeah,
I'm at 6.5. But what are you going to save in your monthly payments? What are you going to save in your monthly payments?
$1,200, I think.
A month.
A month.
That's significant.
Yeah, right? It worked out to be like 30 grand a year.
Let's go to the question really quickly, because I think this is the question that a lot of people have. Everybody's talking about interest rates right now, and the question everybody's asking is, are interest rates going to go down in 2024? Will interest rates drop in 2024, and is now a good time to buy a house or an investment property? This is what everybody's wondering, and when they're doing their interest rate calculations, people are looking at it a little bit differently from different perspectives. Like what you said your wife Missy is looking at it from the perspective of time.
Yeah.
Now, there's a perspective of time, and then there's a perspective of overall cost over a period of time. But then a lot of investors, what they're looking at is whether or not they can survive that time.
Yep.
Right? $1,200 for a lot of people, even though they might be able to pay it off faster, maintaining the higher interest rate, they're worried about whether or not they're going to be able to make it that far.
Yeah, so you're lucky if you can survive.
Right now, I think this is a very critical time, you know, going into 2024, and there's a lot of things happening in our economy, in Canada overall, that are going to be affecting people, the trajectory of people's lives. You know, people are trying to decide whether or not they should live in Canada. People are trying to decide whether they should buy a house. Are they renting? People who have owned homes are shifting into becoming tenants because it is more affordable and they're able to save more and have a higher quality of life as a tenant today than they are as homeowners.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things happening, and Trudeau is making decisions. We have elections coming up. Everybody's crystal ball is saying something a little bit different in terms of what's going to happen in 2024.
I want to touch base on what you just said on how selling your house and become a renter in times are that tough. I read an article, a Ukraine refugee. Let's talk about Trudeau quick, right? We have all these plans in place to bring all these refugees over to Canada, all these Ukraine refugees. And I totally agree. Canada's the best place to live in. I said this many times. Everybody should live in Canada. Ukraine, doesn't matter where you're from, come to Canada. But we're bringing these refugees into Canada, and they are simply now want to leave because they cannot afford it.
By the way, people who came here, not under the circumstances of they wanted to immigrate here. I met a few of these people. They're patriots. They want to go back home.
Yeah.
It's not that they always wanted to leave Ukraine and come over here. They came over here due to circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So is it really that they're leaving or they want to leave because the quality of life here isn't good? Or is it just that they love home?
There's a reason why they're here. You can love home, you know, but they can't go back right now.
Yes.
They jumped through hoops to get here. And now that they're here, they realize that, hey, you know, the entry-level job that I can get doesn't pay for rent, doesn't pay for utilities, doesn't pay for groceries.
Yeah, the standard of living here might not be as high, respectively, as it was from what they had back home. Which is, that's bad, even as I'm saying that out loud.
And being Trudeau, having all these refugees, think this is the way that we're going to grow the economy, not only by helping Ukrainians out, but, you know, bring in the immigration, we're going to create jobs, all this stuff that happens with all these refugees that come in. And then all of a sudden, they want to leave.
Well, the question is, since you read this, did it specify whether they wanted to go back home to Ukraine, or did they want to go to just another country?
No, I didn't say anything about going home back to Ukraine.
Okay, so just leaving.
Just leaving.
There's a lot of the speculation there.
But we see the same thing in our field, too, where people are just, you know, leaving Canada to go somewhere else. We can blame this on interest rates, because when interest rates were 3%, Canada was the best country in the world. Everybody wants to live in Canada.
Yeah.
And then interest rates get a little bit high, and now everybody can't afford to live in Canada.
Yes.
Right? And our housing prices, and you know, we see the great thing of New York, Niagara Falls, the house price there. You know, you get a nice bungalow, $150,000. Niagara Falls, Ontario, you get a nice bungalow there, it's $350,000, $400,000.
No, a nice one, you're still looking at $500,000.
And it makes zero sense. It's the same land. You could argue that, you know, maybe Niagara Falls, Ontario is nicer than New York. I don't know. That's an argument. But it should not cost you that much more money.
When you're comparing them side to side and you're looking at it internally, that may be how it looks. However, if you really consider the global economy, and we talk about this a lot because we're able to garner perspective from people who are immigrating to this country. Why do you think there's so many people from India, from China, from Philippines, from all these other places that still want to come over here? And when a lot of people here are saying, oh, it's so bad, it's so bad. Mm-hmm. Why do you think they still want to come over here? And why don't they go to the States instead?
It's a better life.
It is.
That's what I would think.
By what metric? I feel like a lot of people who live in Canada, they take certain things for granted. And people who say that they would rather go to other countries, I'm of the personal belief that they don't know the difference. Like, I've traveled. tons of different places. And when you look at the quality of life that people have in other places, like, it's not like if you're going to go to India, with exception of maybe going to Mumbai, that's a city, right? You cannot compare the standard of living anywhere in Canada to the way things are. And that's not a knock. That's just the reality of things.
Yes.
Right? And I'll say that from places that I have family and they live there, happily admit, it's like comparing apples and oranges.
Yeah.
Right? Where I think a lot of people are considering leaving is when they capitalize here, they make some money here, and then they want to leave. They're able to go another country. And yeah, when you go to any other country that has nice weather and beaches with money, you're doing good.
What we're talking about here is we're talking about the lower class, right? And how Canada should be that country that if you're the lower class, again, I'm biased, out of any country to be in the lower class, I want to be Canada.
Oh, yeah, because they...
And what we're seeing right now, and what I just told you about the Ukraine refugees, these are people who are lower class. They came here with nothing. Their country is getting bombed daily. They're coming here with nothing. And then they get here and they're like, I want to leave.
Yeah.
Not the best dynamic. Not a good day to be Trudeau. Hasn't been a good couple of years for that guy. Those decisions have been terrible. The cost of living, right, is why they want to leave. They don't want to leave because the views suck. That's not why, right? It's the cost of living is so high. Those apples are so expensive. Those shreddies are so expensive. The rent's so expensive. There's nothing here that is affordable.
Which is why right now...
Let's talk about the beer store, right? We're going to ax the beer store because the beer store has been a monopoly for, what, 50, 60 years.
But are we actually axing it?
We're axing the beer store, right? And that's not federal. This is the PC provincial government has axed the beer store. How do we get to a place where we have some common sense, where we're just sick and sick of paying outrageous amounts? Again, you go over to Niagara Falls, New York. How much is beer?
Way cheaper, yeah.
Why? It's the same beer.
Yeah.
It's the same land the house is on.
Well, that's...
Explain it to me, because it makes no sense.
It's taxes. It's all taxes, right? It's just like cigarettes, right? Cigarettes in the U.S. is cheaper. Cigarettes in Canada is outrageously expensive, and that's why, you know, Canada applies so many taxes, because they want to discourage smoking. Of course, afterwards, they're going to legalize marijuana, having a whole decade of effort to reduce smoking in Canada, and then they go and legalize marijuana. It seems counterintuitive, but... Still, the point is that it's all taxes.
It is crazy how we're in this whirlwind of everything being so expensive and the interest being as high as they are. Yeah. And when will they come down?
There are several factors that are coming into play. So immigration, I feel, is just a part of the economy, the Canadian economy, this engine that keeps everything moving and keeps everybody afloat, whether people want to admit it or not. A lot of people talk about reducing immigration in order to reduce housing, but it's just going to have a trickling problem. There's going to be other economic factors within our economy that's going to suffer, and people are going to feel it in different ways, and then we're just going to focus our complaining attention to the next thing that seems to be obvious, and that's what's going to happen. But right now, things are a little bit more controlled. Things are happening for a reason. It's not just happenstance. It's not this inflation is hitting these targets arbitrarily, or interest rates are pausing arbitrarily. There are reasons for things happening, including other things that are coming to play, like elections. And there's factors that people can artificially control, government can artificially control, like the carbon tax.
Yeah.
You know, we talked previously about how the carbon tax was being paused, at least in certain areas. And I know there's a lot of pressure right now to just simply eliminate the carbon tax across Canada. That will also contribute towards our inflation targets.
Paying a tax on... pollution. We have so many trees in Canada. We do such a good job at monitoring our pollution. Now, listen, I live in the East End. I live near the factories, these once booming factories that are no longer here. And when these factories do have a mistake and something goes up in the sky, the Ministry of Environment runs down and freaking out. They pause everything. They're doing all this testing. What do you think happens in these other countries where we lose all our steel contracts to?
Yeah.
They don't do the same. So we're paying more tax on all this, you know, environmental pollution. Money's never going to fix that problem. It's never going to stop plastic water bottles. Those landfills are not going to fill up slower if we pay more carbon tax.
These things are important to look at with respect to how the economy is going to unfold, because when we ask the question, you know, are interest rates going to go down in 2024, and would that be a good time to buy a property, would that be a good time to invest, you do, in order to make this sort of assertion, need to look at everything that's happening and put it all together, because it's the cost of gasoline, it's the cost of food, it's the cost of everything that comes into play with inflationary numbers. And people sometimes get confused in the chicken or the egg situation, whether it's the interest rates that are contributing to the high cost of everything else, or is the high cost of everything else that's contributing to inflation, contributing to interest rates. Like, what is happening here, and how do we kick this into the right motion, right? Even when we're talking about the GDP, with the population growing the way that it has been, the GDP hasn't gone up, right? Considering how much our population has increased, we should be seeing numbers quite higher. So our economy is in fact suffering, considering the ratio of our GDP to the population. What does this mean to us, and are interest rates going to go down? Let's talk about things that we are aware of that we're already seeing with respect to interest rates. Interest rates in the US went down. Right? We don't need to talk about why it went down over there. All we know is that historically speaking, when interest rates decline in the US, Canada tends to follow suit. Okay. Now, there is an average. Peak of market to drop, there's an average of a 7-month period that it's spaced out. So the U.S. has been holding interest rates now for about 3.5 months, and rates are starting to decline. But from the official drop, they're expecting a 7-month period. And from when the hold is going to be to the drop in Canada, people are anticipating that interest rates should go down by at least 0.25 by April. And this is all speculation. Anything can happen. Usually people might be skeptic, but right now people are talking about us hitting these targets even sooner, largely because of a lot of pressure. Housing being so unaffordable, people can't find a place to live. Rents are getting out of control. We have people who are coming to the country, looking around, and then leaving. Food's getting so expensive. Elections are coming up. Carbon tax is adding pressure, and we're starting to become a little more practical and wonder, why do we have some of these things? Is right now a time where we can afford to lean on our values and say we have principles and pay for them, when the rest of the world isn't necessarily paying for it either?
It blows my mind, the time we're in right now, and there's just a couple simple common sense decisions need to be made to avoid all this. It's not that difficult. The home heating, we're paying carbon tax on our home heating, on our natural gas. How much pollution is my natural gas causing?
And this is the problem where you have the world not on an equal playing field.
What I want is I want someone to tell me, you're charging me this amount of money on my carbon tax, on my home heating, because I'm polluting the world so much. For my natural gas. Tell me the number that I'm polluting. We can't just make stuff up. And then we can't just go, hey, Atlantic Canada, you guys heat your homes with oil, which is the worst. So what we're going to do is we're going to pause the carbon tax. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to push heat pumps onto you. Okay? Because heat pumps is the new way. It is the Tesla of the furnace. Right? Everything's electric. It heats the house. It cools the house. Mm. You know why they don't have natural gas in Atlantic Canada? The cities are so spread out, the communities, that natural gas just doesn't exist. So heat pumps solves the problem. And it's a great idea. Heat pumps are the way to go. But the problem is that we're going to see all these communities. What's going to happen in Atlantic Canada? You know, my family's from Cape Breton, you know, negative 20, negative 25, and everybody's heat, you know, pumping, and they're trying to get at 20 degrees inside so it's nice and cozy. They're going to lose power. The grid's not made for it.
We're not upgrading the grid quickly enough. And when you combine that with the projections of wanting to have electric cars by 2030.
This is common sense stuff. Yeah. You shouldn't have to be a federal politician to like... It blows my mind. We're doing this in Hamilton, right? A lot more people getting heat pumps. It's going to be the same thing. Everybody getting rid of their furnace.
Everybody's going to get electric cars at some point. Going to overload the grid. We're not going to build the LRT in 5 to 10 years. I don't think they're going to upgrade the electrical grid in 5 to 10 years.
I don't know where we're going with these, you know, the interest rates being as high as they are. And we'll tie back in to say that if you're able to survive, especially as a real estate investor, now's a great time to, you know, look at what you're doing with your money.
Yeah.
If you are able to afford it, the rents right now are so, so high.
And that's where you're going to see an equalizer come in. We've talked about the sine wave of real estate, right? Where the real estate prices tend to go like this. And then when they start to go down in their sine wave, the rental values stagger. As affordability for these homes goes down, rental values go up. And they're basically going to hit an equalizing point where they're going to see the same thing they saw 10 years ago, where they're just like, hey, the cost of rent is almost the same price of a mortgage payment, and it will get there again, right? It will get there where we're renting a house. Like, what are we seeing houses rent for, even like outside of Toronto? Like $3,000. Yeah. And like, if you're looking at people's mortgages are around five.
Yeah.
Right? So people, even at high interest rates, yeah. So people's mortgages are around five. So $3,000 for that, five is a checkpoint. You need to see that get a little bit higher, or for mortgage rates to drop. So there's going to be a point where rents go a little bit higher, mortgages come a little bit down, and it's going to hit that equalizing point where people are going to be back to asking that same question. Is it worth it to buy, or is it better to rent? And it's going to be kind of a bit of a juggle here, because it's going to seem a little the same.
It's crazy that the interest rates right now, as high as they are, is that people are weighing that question. Because to me, there's no question. If you have an opportunity to buy, you're buying.
Yeah.
If you have enough money, you're buying.
That's not true for everybody.
No, but...
It should... I understand your mindset on it, but why are so many people choosing to sell their house and rent for a period of time? So a lot of people are making that decision.
I don't know why they're making that decision.
They're stuck at 2% interest rates. 50% of mortgages are at around 2% right now, and are going to go up by almost more than double.
Yes, and the stress test done at 5, that was probably done incorrectly. Or, you know, we bend the lines a little bit.
Yeah.
And now we're at 6.5.
Interest rate, yeah. Stress tests are being done at 8 now, I think.
At right 8, yeah. So, you know, it's, and now what we see is that a year or 2 years from now, when interest rates go down, the stress test won't follow. It won't follow. It will stay at 8.
I don't know that. I have not looked into that, but I wouldn't
that's
be surprised.
That's why the defaults are happening. Mm. The stress test was too low. It was too easy to get in.
Cost of living of everything else went up. So technically speaking, the stress test maybe didn't factor in a few things. We are seeing an increase in foreclosures. Mm-hmm. We are seeing an increase of people listing their homes, trying to sell them right now, mm-hmm. right? This is the most properties we've ever seen on the market with such mm-hmm. a low amount of buyers, especially when you can factor in that there is a housing crisis and people need a place to live. It just means there's something in the equation that isn't giving and something needs to change. Yeah. So it's an interesting time, because it does feel like this is about the snapping point of this rubber band of our economy, where something's going to happen. And that's why I feel like there's all this buzz. Everybody's talking about it, how like things are changing right now, because it has to. It has to, or it's going to break.
It will change. And then Trudeau is going to call an election and be, you know, Superman.
He's not going to do that again.
He's going to be Superman. And you know what? We're all going to forget about it. We're all going to forget about it. And we're all going to vote Liberal again.
No, yes, don't say that. Don't say that.
And he's single.
That.
He's a bachelor.
No, we're shut up, man. That's not going to happen.
We're going to vote for him. That's what we always do. We give in to that guy.
Dude, Trudeau is so low on the ratings. So low on the ratings. There has not been this much animosity towards the prime minister. Again, I don't even know about this news, but I do read it. People are talking about it all the time, how there's a lot of negative sentiment towards the current leader of Canada. Even globally, with respect to other leaders seeming like they don't like him, right? You see, there's those videos online where they record, where they show Trudeau at the summit, and people are not giving him any attention. It's like they resent him.
They don't vote for him.
No, they don't vote for him.
You know who votes for him? Atlantic Canada gets all the free heat pumps.
Okay.
You know who doesn't vote for him? Alberta, who also has those cold winters and the oil furnaces that aren't getting the heat pumps.
Yes.
Will eventually be, you know, hey, I want the heat pumps, right? We need to vote Liberal. This will happen. This is how elections work. They know what people want. We will see so much stuff change once we know when the election will be called. It will be crazy how the Liberals, and we see now the polls, you see the poll numbers, they're terrible for the Liberals. We'll redo this clip on election night. I bet you it's close. It's going to be close.
So this is where I think it's interesting how people who are looking at it from the political perspective versus people who are just looking at the raw data as to what the economy needs to do in order for interest rates to regulate.
Yeah.
Trudeau's going to have to do something quite drastic in order to maintain, in order to maintain favor amongst the people. And that is going to have to do with interest rates. It's definitely going to have to do with interest rates. It's going to have to do with making things more affordable across the board. Yeah. And it's going to have to be something drastic. And if that happens, then yes, I can see things working out for him or him gaining favor. But if we're just looking at what's happening in the economy, and we want to look at things that are reasons as to why everything's happening the way that it is, right? The Canadian bond yields have been declining. Generally, what happens is fixed interest rates in particular, they're going to follow suit. Now, when bond yields increase, interest rates are going to raise in line with that. But when they go down, for some reason, they're slower to come down. There's a saying, which is that interest rates, when they follow the bonds, is going to take the elevator up and it's going to take the stairs down. We're not going to see any changes that are going to be too drastic. The thing is, we might see more drastic changes happen simply because the election is coming up and our leaders are going to start to try to control things a little more artificially, which may be good for us in the short term, but I really worry about what that's going to mean for us in the long term.
Yeah, it's just crazy that our democracy can be controlled like that. How I have to pay a super high mortgage for a year and a half only because another guy wants to get in office. We're diving right now at the lowest of the lows.
If we think about it sensibly, I do wish that the people who are making these decisions would really think about it from the perspective of the people, where why is the sentiment the way it is? Why are people making the decisions that they're making? Why are people coming here considering leaving? And why is it people who are capable of leaving are making that motion? People are looking at their mortgage payments over here, and then they go to vacation in, let's say, Cuba, Costa Rica, Punta Cana, you name it, and they look at their stay over there and they say, hey, you know what, it's actually cheaper for me to stay in an all-inclusive resort where everything is taken care of and pay for two people for a month than it is for me to pay my mortgage in Canada. A $750,000 home is going to run you about like $5,000 in mortgage payments, and it's only going to cost you about $2,000 to stay in, let's say, like 2-3 weeks. And you're not going to stay at the top shelf place, but you're going to stay at a pretty nice place. Chances are better than a lot of people's homes.
Yeah.
And everything's taken care of.
And food, nice gas, weather.
Everything. Hey, nice weather. Why not? What people are considering this. They try to solve some of the problems that they have. Like the housing crisis, it gets spoken about so much, and the government, and that's where the government tries to artificially control it by imposing restrictions. But the government needs to stop imposing restrictions more than they need to be facilitating opportunity and facilitating the right opportunity. You do not facilitate opportunities that are going to be detrimental for the people, right? That's why it's important to not have incentives where people can capitalize on. Like when there was incentives for foreign investors to come in and buy, if they brought X amount of millions of dollars, they didn't have to pay taxes. And then they would just invest for like however many years, not pay taxes, take the money, go back home. That facilitates the wrong kind of opportunity, right? But if you facilitate opportunity that incentivizes people who are going to spend money in the country, then you're on the right track, right? Because when they try to control Airbnb, really what they should be looking at is why are investors looking to rent to short-term tenants rather than rent to regular people who are going to stay long-term.
Yeah.
Instead of addressing that problem, they just try to impose control.
Yeah, it's crazy that they didn't ask that question before they just want to stop Airbnb.
No, right? And now people are finding more creative ways to get around this. And they're looking at midterm rentals where they're renting out to corporations. And they're starting to have commercial lease agreements where they don't fall under the Residential Tenancies Act. And you have tenancies that are commercial where they have their own bailiff system and you're able to just move people as needed.
Yeah.
And then you also see people just getting into this gray hospitality area where people are renting by the day and they're charging HST and they're offering cleaning services so that the place isn't constituted a long-term rental and is more in the hospitality area outside of the Residential Tenancies Act. Why are people thinking about all these things?
There's only one reason, right? And that's the LTV sucks.
The LTV sucks, and the government is trying to just impose its control to solve the housing crisis when really it's not actually doing anything positive for anybody. It's just raising the cost of living and making things harder for both parties.
Crazy how we're trying to fix problems with taxes. I don't see any other solution that our government does without just taxing us.
No.
We have a housing crisis. What we're going to do, we're going to tax very high the short-term rental owners, right? Those landlords get taxed the highest. We don't want them in our cities. Instead of saying, hey, you know, these guys rent out, you know, 20 nights a month all year round, and there's 50 of them in my community. You know what that means? That means that we need to build, you know, 50 more units. It's simple. It shouldn't be on the landlord's back. The landlord stuff gets me going, because all what the government sees about landlords is that we're getting rich, right? And we're taking advantage of tenants. That's totally, totally not the case. Totally not. Airbnb is so hard to manage. That's a full-time job. If you had a couple of Airbnbs, that is a full-time job to manage that. And you're only doing that because you don't trust the LTV. Most Airbnbs don't make more money than they would long-term renters. There's some exceptions, cottage country, some exceptions. You know, August, you probably, you know, June, July, make more money. But, you know, most of the time, blows my mind the way that we're going.
There's a considerable hurdle, especially with Airbnb, that a lot of real estate investors are willing to tackle, being the financing option, where when they do Airbnb, unless they already have an existing Airbnb enterprise where it operates the business and they can place their business as a commercial tenant to their own property, they're not able to necessarily leverage that income because banks won't always factor it in. You have to have everything set up beforehand in order to be able to properly leverage the property. Unlike with a standard tenancy where you can put tenants in, charge them the rents, and the bank is going to consider that income when you go to refinance your property or leverage anything or leverage yourself in any way. The fact that people are willing to undertake those hurdles instead of renting out, it just goes to show. So all these things factor in. And when we consider the impact of what this is going to have onto the interest rates, what is it that you think we're going to see in 2024? Data's pointing towards that we're seeing an incremental drop in April, but what do you think is going to happen afterwards?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see a quick drop. I think what we're going to see is that we're going to, you know, maybe get half a point off in a year. It's going to be very, very slow. And I think our economy will bounce back and we will see, you know, inflation curve, but, you know, the Bank of Canada will be very, very slow on lowering those rates. It definitely won't be half a point at a time. There's no way. It'll be very, very slow.
What do you think is going to happen to the masses of people who are having mortgage renewals coming to play? You know, they're trying to redo the mortgage charter right now, so they're trying to make amendments to it. I looked into it. It doesn't actually sound that favorable. I think it sounds like it would be helpful to a lot of people. Basically, it allows extension of terms, extension of amortization period. So basically you can go like 30, I think you want to go 35, 40 year mortgages kind of thing in order to make the payments more manageable today.
My advice for that would be, you know, go to a broker. Don't go to the bank, go to the broker, see what he can do. If you do have a relationship with your broker, you can talk to him about that. Hey, can I renew for a year at my current rate just for 1 year and see what happens, right? I have heard stories of them saying yes, right? Where they just don't want you to default because that is a worry on them now. It's a tricky, tricky spot. I wouldn't want to get locked in on a 5% right now, because in 5 years, I don't think we'll be at 5%. But I do think, you know, for 2024, 2025 is when we'll see maybe 3.5-4%.
See, I picked variable rates across the board. Did you go in variable on anything?
Yeah, I'm the worst gambler in the world.
Okay, fine.
The worst gambler in the world.
I went variable, not because I'm a gambler. I went variable because of the penalty, because of the flexibility. With variable, you have more option to switch and adjust. You're not going to pay these high penalties.
What I tell myself before I go to sleep on mortgage payment day, so what I tell Missy on mortgage payment day, everybody has to pay into it. It doesn't matter if you bought the house 3 years ago and you got 2% and you're going to renew now at 5%. You know, I have to pay 6.5 now. In 2 years, I'll probably pay 3.5. It balances out.
I think so. And that's why I also picked variable. Even when I talk to anybody about variable, historically, variable has always outperformed fixed.
Yes.
In the bigger picture. In the short term, maybe there's small periods. Like right now, I consider small periods.
We just never saw the jumps that we've went through. And again, if you're lucky enough to go through the stress and still have the property when the rates start to come down, that's how Missy's thinking, is that, hey, you know, when rates do go down, we just keep the same payment, we keep the same momentum going, the mortgage paid off 6 years quicker.
When people consider the actual true number difference between choosing a fixed versus a variable mortgage today, it's really only $100 in every 0.25, right? So it's $100 difference. So if you were looking at paying, let's just say, 5% versus 6.5%, yeah, or like what's the differences right now? We're at 5.5. No, I think people are starting to get mortgages at what, 5% right now fixed?
Yeah, you can get a 5-year fixed.
If you're looking at otherwise paying 7%, that is going to be about $800 difference.
Yeah, it's a big difference.
It's significant. But as that changes, all sentiment is pointing towards is starting to decline now. So we should start seeing variable rate mortgages improve in the near future. Near future, I mean in the new year and some of those early months, first quarter kind of thing. And as that starts to improve, that should come down $100. Most mortgages, about $100 every adjustment.
Yeah.
Right. So you should start seeing that come down. And that will really tighten the gap. And so, yes, you are hedging. Well, are you going to be paying it more now? Or are you going to be paying it more later? And are you playing a long game or are you playing a short game?
Yeah. What I would say is, are you the type of person that can be flexible on your payments? Or are you the type of person that you want same payments every month for the next 5 years?
Yeah.
And if you're that person, then you take the fixed.
The only time I maybe would consider taking a fixed now is based off of some of the changes and adjustments that are going to happen with the next election. Whatever's put into play, I personally wouldn't bank on these changes lasting in a beneficial way for a particularly long time. And at that point, I might go for something fixed because I think whatever they're going to put into motion might deteriorate pretty quickly.
What I learned is that when something crazy happens, like COVID, that affects us so much financially, that's what it did, right? Everybody lost their jobs. We have CERB. What they're going to do when something crazy happens, could be another COVID. And when the interest rates are 3.5, what they're going to do is when COVID's over, they're just going to jack them again. And they're going to curb inflation. That's what I took away from this. Yes, once I'm at 3.5%, because I think that's a sweet spot, I'm happy paying 3.5% on all that money, I'll lock it in.
A lot of people, I think, got greedy who went onto variable. Like when you're at 1-2% and you stay on variable... Yeah, it's a little bit, it ends up being a little bit greedy. Again, you have to consider the options that you're looking at. Like on some of the properties that I went variable, if I was looking to sell them or move them in some fashion, the penalties would have outweighed. But this is where you have to have an understanding of what your intention is and what your financial flexibility is like.
Yes.
Right?